Welcome to the United Voice Oklahoma podcast, where we are practicing the art of kindness and civil discourse and authenticity and storytelling. Our goal is to foster a healthy dialogue about race relations in our community. We seek common ground for common good and hope these conversations encourage you to build authentic relationships outside of your race or comfort zone. This season of the podcast is made possible by the generous support of the Oklahoma City Black Justice Fund. Thanks for tuning in and welcome to the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the final episode of the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. I'm here today with one of my favorite hosts of all of the hosts we've had over the years, my man Taylor Doe. What's up, Tito?
What's up? Glad to be here. We're nearing the end, and so just want to say, one, thanks for the opportunity to co-host with you for a few episodes, kind of be a guest co-host, but also want to thank the listeners for joining in on this final episode.
Yes, okay. I'm a little bit nervous about ending this. I don't know why, but we're going to do things a little differently today. And as we wrap up and reflect on the journey of the United Voice podcast, we're joined today in studio by our friend Mark Nerentz, who has acted as the producer on every single episode of this podcast and has been here since the beginning, more than 4 years ago.
It's crazy. Crazy.
So we plan to look back and reflect together about this podcast and talk about some of the things you may want to listen to moving forward. And in the process, we want Mark to share about the work that he's been doing here in Oklahoma City. It's been phenomenal stuff. So, Mark, welcome to your show, the United Voice podcast.
Thanks, guys. It's fun. Taylor was like, Mark, we need to talk to you. So I was like, absolutely. And I'm happy to help us all wrap it up. So.
Sure.
Man, your footprint has, what you've meant to this podcast and the conversations that flow from every episode has been marvelous. But what a lot of people don't know, which I hope we reveal here today, is that your footprint is all over the city.
Yep.
All over the city. Are you ready to share about all that? Because you're pretty modest.
That's kind of you to say, but I love to talk about it because I feel really lucky that I get to. So yes, but yes, I am. I'd love to.
Yep. Let me share a little bit about the stats of just this podcast. 68 different episodes.
That's right. I know. Since 2019.
Some heavy lifting.
Yeah.
What is the average? The average podcast has like, what, 2.5 episodes?
That's what I've heard people say, yeah. Once you get a great idea to start one, then it's like, yeah, this is a lot of work. Yeah.
That's like a legitimate podcast.
Oh, man. Oh, man, I didn't, and because of working with Mark and all of the co-hosts, I mean, from the very beginning, Cece, it has just been, it hadn't felt like that much work.
No.
I mean, you make it very easy.
Mm. Well, it's been teamwork. It's the, because my friend Reese Black, who used to edit all of them and put it together, it's never just been one person, but I felt like it was easy because I didn't have to do any of the hosting. You've done 60, pretty much 60, almost 65, 68, but yeah, it's a team effort because it's like I just get to sit and listen to you guys have awesome conversations, and then I get the fun of editing them. So, but yeah, it has been a lot. That is the truth.
Yeah. So we started this in 2019. It was before COVID, before the summer of 2020. We covered a lot of hard topics in a very unique and diverse time in our country. Let me tell you about some of the co-hosts we had. First and foremost, we started this. I remember when we talked about it very early on, we would have some stronger together meetings, and we were talking about community engagement, and we were talking. And as we said in those meetings, we thought, man, that was some powerful stuff.
Yeah.
If somebody would have just recorded some of the passion that these people had, notably Cece Jones Davis.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole time we were suggesting a podcast, I'm thinking, Cece has to host this podcast. And I think she was thinking the whole time that I needed to go. So we launched as a team and launched this podcast as co-host. So Cece Jones Davis was primarily our first voice in this.
For pretty much half the all episodes of this entire thing. But yes.
Oh, yeah. And so she got busy, you know, with the Julius Jones campaign.
And then she moved right before the
And then she moved out of and the state, moved so. And still kept in touch and still supported us and did some things. And then we had Dr. Andrea Benjamin from the University of Oklahoma, John Mindendorf from OKC First Church, and Mackenzie Magnus, Scotia Moore, and at least we got to have Taylor Doe.
I just have to say, Tito voluntarily redid all of our branding and graphics and make them look legit versus what they were not before that. He'd made it look good, and I really appreciate it.
And he did it without saying they look like trash. Yeah. But you know,
I never said that.
You never said that. That's good. So
it's like
thank
I
you
designed
so much.
It on yeah. Microsoft Word or something because I don't know what I'm doing. So.
You're doing a little refresh.
Tito, I don't know if you. I know that you follow the show from 2019, long before you co-hosted. But we did some of our early episodes. Like in my kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did.
You could hear the birds chirping and kids walking in. And then we did some at the parish right there on Penn Avenue. Right. We recorded at the Boys and Girls Club with JB. I remember we did one episode there with JB. We did some over Zoom. Of course, because we had to.
We did some over your fax at the fax center.
Yeah,
too,
we did some at the police department. And then right here, right where we sit today, at Possibilities. So we've been all over the place.
Yeah.
It's been incredible.
And it was awesome because most of those places let us use their spots for free. And we kind of were grassroots winging it every time anyways. And I thought that was fun. It's like no one was telling us how to do a podcast. And we were just like, well, we find a room, set up the mics, and just talk. And so it looked a little rough sometimes, but we got the stories out there.
Yeah. Mark, I know you primarily first met you as a video guy.
Mm-hmm.
This ain't video. This is audio. So tell us a little bit before we get in here why you were the one producing this podcast and how it came about.
Shoot. It's you're right. It was my first time to ever be involved in a podcast, and it was honestly just saying yes and being in those conversations with folks from Stronger Together. And everyone saying, who produces a podcast? And I think I kind of said, in theory, it's no different than shooting videos, except it's just storytelling the audio. And I volunteered, or not really voluntold, but I kind of was the one who said, like, I think I could do that. I know a guy who does it, Reese. And so we can get in later when I talk about my story a little bit, how that made sense to me. But I was blessed to be in some of the circles with you and Scotia and our friends Lee Rowland and Clarence Hill. And in those conversations where when we said, how would we record this, it just made sense for me to say, hey, I understand the role of producing, of organizing people to get in a room, talk through it, and get it edited and put out there. And it just kind of made sense back in 2019. And then once we did a few, I just didn't want to let it go. Everyone kept saying yes, so we just kept rolling forward with it.
Yeah, that's super cool. Mark, I've seen you over the years in a lot of different rooms and spaces. I'd show up to different community events and all this stuff, and there's the tripod and the camera, and you just kind of like quietly like documenting. And I think that's where you and I have found kind of commonality, is in documenting and storytelling, right?
100%.
And kind of the art of storytelling. And so I'd love to jump in here and kind of start with that. It's like, give us a little of your background. How did you find your passion about storytelling? How did you like develop that craft? Where did it all start?
Awesome. Well, thanks. And yes, I agree. It's been cool to get to know you and many others just by like being there and being like, actually, I have permission to like be part of this too. So, I grew up in Norman. My dad's a pastor, still is, at Lutheran Church, Trinity Lutheran Church in Norman. And I'll just fast forward to 14 years old in high school. We had a history contest in our AP US history class called History Day. It was like, we got to break into groups of friends and do some project. And the dudes that I got in a group with, we wanted to do a documentary about World War II. And I thought that sounds cool. I'd never touched a camera, done anything to do with video before, but my buddy had a high camera, and a old, what were they called back then? PowerBook MacBook. And, at my dad's church were a bunch of guys who were veterans who had been drafted into World War II. And so we needed to interview some guys that had been drafted. And I was like, I know how to get the guys. Let me do the interviews. And so I just liked talking to people. And that's where it started. We sat down and interviewed these guys. And then I fell in love over the course of that year with the taking it from the tapes. And then, oh my gosh, you can control, like, he says this, and then he says this, and then you put the music, and then the old footage of Pearl Harbor or whatever. And so that was the first thing I ever got to make when I was 14 or so. And then it, like, won the contest, and we got to take it to D.C. Like, we got a little thing at the Capitol. And as a 14-year-old, I think I was just hooked. I was like, I love video wow. storytelling. And this was way – it was not a digital thing about it. Well, there – it was a longer process to get stuff off the tapes and all that. But since then, progressed, went and did that in high school and then journalism school. And there's a lot more to it, but I really just fell in love from a young age with the idea of the documentary style of storytelling. Mm-hmm. I thought, I don't know that I've even told you guys this part of it before. As I was a freshman at OU, I really thought I wanted to go into like History Channel stuff because that's what I'd done. And I loved interviewing people about historic events. There came this opportunity my freshman year to, there was a partnership with the History Channel, the TV channel, and the Honors College at OU, where a guy who produced for the History Channel and was a historian was one of the like faculty at OU. Mm-hmm. And so they had this contest to say we love, they were going to do a series on the defining moments of the baby boomer generation. So like stuff that happened in the Vietnam era.
Yep.
And they were going to shoot a show, and they wanted college students to help host it. And so I tried out and got it. As a freshman, I got to go help co-host the pilot episode of this show on the History Channel about – so I went to Kent State, Ohio for 4 days with this whole production crew. And they it was a documentary about the shootings that happened at Kent State in, 70, I think. Yeah. I might be getting the year wrong, but – that was where 4 students were killed by the National Guard. And I went with them. I was on this episode. We interviewed a guy who was in the National Guard, a guy who was shot and was in a wheelchair, had been paralyzed, people who knew those who were killed. And so I got, as a freshman, as a 19-year-old, to like work with the History Channel, actually be on TV in this episode on the History Channel.
Wow.
And see like, okay, this is how the documentary world works. And I realized it was not at all like what I thought it was. I was like, oh, this is different. So I started asking the guys, like, what does it take to, you know, make a living making documentaries? And the producers were like, you don't, that's not a thing that exists. Like, there is no job to be a documentary filmmaker. And I'm like, what do you mean? And we own a production company. The History Channel hired us to produce one season of this show. And then like, after this is done, we might go work on Survivor or their Amazing Race or like it's not just a job that someone had to make documentaries. And I thought it was. I thought I'm gonna go get hired for the History Channel and make documentaries my whole life. So that I was like, okay, reality check as yeah. a like that's not a thing.
Bubble busted.
Exactly. It was a cool experience, but I was like, okay, that's not something that I can do. But honestly, it evolved me into where I figured out a way to do it in a different way.
Right.
But so that's kind of how it all started.
What was your first camera?
First camera? Oh, I think I texted this to you one time. I have it in my journal from like when I was a kid when I bought it on eBay for like $173 or something. It was a Sony Hi8 TRV something number, but it took the little Sony Hi8. I still have it. I still have the camera, but like, and it got a lot of use. Yep. A lot of use.
Yeah. I think we're going to go in here, but we want to talk about OKC Good,
mm-hmm.
right? But I'm curious, you know, I always have been, is you're in a particular lane of video, like yeah. of storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting when I first started hanging out with you is that you don't really see you do like music videos. Right. You don't really do commercials. You don't really, it's a particular lane that is, that I have to characterize as just good stuff for our city, right? Tell me about OKC Good
yeah.
and how you carved out this niche
uh-huh.
of storytelling.
Well, you're right. I've had people ask me to do I do this music videos? And I've been like, yeah, you don't want me to do your music videos.
I'll tell you right now.
Other people that you want to do. So it is a niche, and I guess at the most basic level, OKC Good is the nonprofit that I founded 10 years ago that exists to inspire action through storytelling in Oklahoma City. It's a video production company that is a nonprofit that does discounted or affordable video production for other nonprofits. That's the very basic level of what it is. So what that means is a lot of organizations need videos to have their story told, but they can't necessarily afford it, or what they can afford, they can only pay for once every 5 years or something. And I saw the problem being, I don't think there has to be that big of a barrier, especially for the smaller to mid-sized nonprofits to get their stories out there. So that's the niche I kind of serve, I think. Why I chose that niche discovered that it was there and then chose I wanted to pursue it is, I don't know, it's a bit fuzzier. I can't take credit for it. It kind of just happened. But long story short, when I was you guys have heard me tell this before, but when I was at OU and thought I was after the History Channel thing, and I thought that's what I wanted to do, I got real plugged in with some different activism efforts in different parts of Africa. I had never left the U.S. at all. And I decided to do a minor at OU in African studies, studying Southern African history, and ended up going on a lot of different trips with different groups, mission trip groups, et cetera. And I was just the video guy. My reason to go on these trips to South Africa, Kenya, Uganda, other countries was to help document what these groups were doing. And then I fell in love with the whole other dichotomy of like, oh, wow, my storytelling can actually like help people. It can actually make an impact on like showing a part of the world or suffering or solutions that most people here wouldn't know about unless someone like goes over there and documents it. So that's what gave me the impulse to document the current and the people doing the good outside of the like the historical stuff. Mm. That's where it started. And then I could talk about that forever, but that's what eventually led to OKC Good, is I ended up living in South Africa for about a year on a Fulbright grant from the State Department, doing videos for 6 different nonprofits in the city I was in. And then OKC Good was a direct outpouring for that. Moved back here, got engaged, and was like, I want to do that same thing I did over there here. Yeah. And that's when that all started. So.
Man, you know, Qubit and I have worked with young people for many years, and I know that you've been involved in different mentoring things. It's interesting to see when young people have a skill and connect it to value. Mm. Like they see that it works in the thing that lights up inside of them, right? It's like, hey, I thought I had the skill, or I'm exploring a little bit. And, you know, then you make this connection. You're in Africa, you're shooting these videos, you're seeing like the help that it's providing and how that can be a launch pad, you know, to what you were doing, and say, oh, well, if this is possible, there's got to be other things that are possible, right?
Totally.
And so you just did that in the story, kind of storytelling lane. And so I even kind of think for our city, you know, it's like, what does it look like for young people to have a skill? And then what are the environments or the scenarios where they get to kind of validate that, where there is value there? And it seems like for years, you kind of had these moments in time where it's like History Channel, and then it was like Africa. You can kind of pinpoint moments that kind of identified, okay, there's value here as a young person. I can make a difference. I can do these things. So it's really cool to kind of hear those moments that really validated that.
You know, I heard in all of that, Tito, I heard everything that you just said, the opportunities that he just presented, the opportunities that he took, and the risk that he took to do it. I guess I ain't heard no job yet. I haven't heard a job.
Very true and very valid.
Right. So I'm being funny, but at the same time, Where does that?
Yeah.
Tell me how you were able to find actual value, and that you could actually make a living doing this.
Mm-hmm. That is, I didn't even think about talking about that, but it's like the biggest hurdle there was. So thank you for asking that. This is, okay. So it is my full-time job now, and it took a long time to get there. So long story short, like, yes, I graduated college, spent a number of years not making money, but just raising enough money, doing yard work for a family friend in Norman to get enough money to buy the next plane ticket to fly to Africa again, go broke, come back, repeat. But I was, you know, that was what you do when you're 22. Mm-hmm. But then once I got married and was trying to find a job, essentially my wife, Laura, she was occupational therapist, and she was working right out of her master's degree. And I decided that I wanted to start this OKC Good thing in 2013, but exactly that, it was not going to provide an income. It was not a job. It was like my heart's passion, but there was no, like, you can't just show up to a foundation or someone who gives a 501c3 and be like, I want to, for less money as one person, make videos for people. So can you fund me to do that? It's just like, I wouldn't even try for the first couple of years, 'cause there's not a chance anyone's going to fund mm-hmm. me to do that.
Yeah.
So, I also started a freelance video company for any, also just me, but for any type of work unrelated to the nonprofits, but just your typical corporate stuff. And the vision, so we have two kind of lanes here. One is OKC Good, and I was doing it. But to be honest, a lot of it the first few years was just free stuff, mm-hmm. going out and covering events, putting together little recap videos. And every once in a while, I'd get someone to like pay me a huge job of like $2,000 that by the end of the year, I'd be like, I can keep like half of that. Right. So it was little baby steps. But I had this freelance company, and to be honest with you, I relate with what you just said about all those moments. And when you've started pushing all this and then stuff, you know that I've like very much connected with that, because mm-hmm. I'm like, dude, I could say and then 1,000 times about all the different steps. And so this was another big and then God type blessing. Right when I was getting OKC Good started, I got a text from a friend of a friend who had a freelance client who needed some help with a silly little editing project. So I just essentially in that whole season just said yes to everything. If it was going to make me a little bit of money with video, I said yes to it. And long story short, that led to this working with this one guy for about 4 years, editing some business consulting curriculums that he was shooting that were used all over the world for big companies. And he had this big client, and I was his like go-to editor, and it was endless work, paid well. I could set my own hours, but this was all, it helped us buy our first house. It helped us get enough money when our first daughter was born. But OKC Good was going this whole time, not paying me. And so this was like for 4 or 5 years until about 2016, 17, it just flipped. There was enough income coming in from enough small jobs with nonprofits that I could slow down on the freelance side, and it just worked. And that's way simplifying it, but I'll just say it was a number of years of patient persistence and like believing enough to not give up, to keep pushing with those nonprofits and foundations, be like, I promise you, there's a need for this. Nonprofits are telling me that this like really helps them. And I think it was just me being stubborn enough to not stop, yet having a very legitimate backfall that could provide for my family in the other video work.
Yeah.
That was just the biggest blessing, because it allowed me to do that until it came. It's been more than 5 years now that it has been a job, but to be brutally honest, the job is like, I just do a ton of videos and they pay less than they would otherwise, but enough of them can pay for what I do, and have been very gracious to start getting some grants from different foundations,
right.
and some others that have funded really to help cool. undergird it.
Tito, I gotta do this, and I know this is off script and not in the order of things, but you guys are used to me by now. I know I do this, but he talked about and then, and I'm just on a whim. There might be someone listening that doesn't know what he's talking
yes,
about.
Yes, please.
Right, and so in the elevator speech of what the concept of and them is, but overlay it to how what he just said about his journey to from Africa and a church to where we are now.
For sure. So the short version is that today we're talking about kind of your story of success, mm-hmm. how you kind of built this really great storytelling organization. And when we tell our stories of success, and what I've kind of seen over the years is that we kind of hit the high points, kind of just go from next to next. And we use this phrase and then as a transition word. And then I went to OU, and then I started OKC Good. Right. And then, and that phrase, that one phrase kind of disguises some of the details that actually allow people to take that next step. And so, you know, one of those and then moments for you that I hear is, you know, that first camera that your mm-hmm. friend had, right, that allowed you to explore. And then the connections that you had with this church to do these trips, right? You had a relationship there. And then even for you to get kind of this this baseline work that funds your life, working kind of in the corporate sector a little bit, that would be an and then moment, a moment that we don't often share about how we kind of get to where we're at. So one, I just want to thank you for being vulnerable and kind of sharing some of those moments with our listeners, because we will have some young listeners who, I mean, storytelling's in right now, and kids have phones now, you know, it's like they're not rocking around, you know, tape and big cameras, but they are storytellers in and of themselves. And so being able to kind of chart that path for them in a very authentic way, I think is super key.
Yeah. And it's, the idea that the Taylor talks about and shares about and speaks about the and thens has been, it really has reshaped how I think about a lot of this stuff, because it's, I would just encourage anyone out there listening, like, it's really helpful tool to help you be grateful for those in your life that helped get you to where you were. Cause I mean, just the one you mentioned about my buddy with the camera, like, it just reminded me, not only did I have a camera, like, I didn't have a computer. Mm. I literally would go to his house. I would just go in when he wasn't even home. His parents would let me. I'm serious. His name was
Mark's
Bob.
Here again.
Yeah. No. Or if they were, he wasn't home. But I'd go to his basement room and edit on his computer, because that was just how we did things in 2002 or whatever. Yeah. But
way back then.
Yeah. But it was like this whole passion, and they just, that was a massive and then that the Milstein family let me do that. But I'm just like, I don't even think about that anymore.
Yeah.
You know, and so those things are key.
You came to mind actually last week. I got to speak in Bartlesville at my alma mater.
Oh, nice.
To all the juniors and seniors. And
hometown hero.
Yeah. And so while I was there, they had their production. They do full video production at the school now, which was not a thing, right? When we were going through, they had four different cameras, four different students on four different cameras. They had students in the back doing sound design sound engineering. And the whole time, I'm just like, these are amazing practice reps for these students to get exposed, right? Like, you kind of had to find a friend and you're kind of in the basement. It's like, this is at school, right? Of being able to do that. And then as Qubits kind of moved into the kind of education space full time at this point, we talk a lot about, you know, opportunities for young people. And is there video, you know, that we know that in some schools in Oklahoma City, there's not that opportunity to hold really nice cameras and, you know, all this stuff. And so it just kind of makes me think about those moments and exposure pieces to kind of this storytelling capability.
Well, and this is something we had, I know we don't have a ton of time left, but this is something I've been thinking about, is like, as I'm growing OKC Good, I'm not there yet, but like, I want to do this for the rest of my life, but not by myself. Mm. And I'm not, just to be totally clear, like, I've never hired anybody. It's still just me. Yeah. Hire freelancers. But that thing you just mentioned of training young people to do it, I get really excited about the potential there. Because most of the folks who I have hired have been younger, have been some high school students. And it just really excites me to think of, like, giving those who are hungry and want the opportunity to do this kind of storytelling. I didn't see this happening, but now it's on my plate. Like, oh my gosh, I created a platform that actually allows for that. Yeah. Like, easily can get you tons of people to interview. I'm like, when did that happen? I don't know, but it's, come with me. Let's get to it. Like,
yeah, that's right. I want to move fast here and go a little bit deeper, because you did go a little bit deeper with your storytelling, in that, yes, you were doing stories about fact in the police department and the police athletic league and all of these other nonprofits that were doing great things. But where you and I became personal and friends was definitely over the topic of race.
Yeah.
And you didn't just use your camera in the storytelling. You got involved in the work, not just in how you live, but where you show up and how you use your platform. Talk a little bit about how you've just went a little bit deeper because of your storytelling. I think you used the camera as an excuse to get in. I don't know
that
how it happened.
The truth. Yeah.
But you came in deeply, and we've had some deep conversations. Talk about that.
Well, I have been tremendously blessed by what you just said and friendship with you as well. But I think it's exactly both what you just said. I don't think I would have decided to insert myself into the conversations, not because I didn't want to be, but maybe because I felt like I didn't belong, or I'm just like, what do I have to add here? But because the camera does give you an excuse to go pretty much anywhere, when you're the video guy and someone needs it, like, you just get to be in the room and fly on the wall. And so I found myself a number of times, mainly through relationships through SALT and some other organizations, in the room with you and Clarence Hill and some of these people. But then it quickly became like, okay, I actually can be part of this conversation, and the storytelling can help spread the conversation. So that's what led to this podcast, a lot of the efforts with United Voice Oklahoma in general. But to be honest, the and then moment, so to speak, I believe you were there as well, was in 2014, 2015, whenever the Selma movie came out, and there was a big gathering of folks on the Northeast side. They just had a morning donut meeting after a bunch of people had gone to see the movie, and there's a huge group picture, and I'm pretty sure you're in it. Do you remember that day at all?
I think
it was, and there was a time when someone there said, like, this is going to be a time of, I think there was a prayer happening, or a time of, like, acknowledging a repentance if you'd never cared or thought about people who didn't look like you in your own community. And I'm like, I've been to Southern Africa like 9 times and 10 different countries, but I know like squat about Northeast Oklahoma City. It was just, I realized like, dang, like I definitely have a passion for helping serve people in different economic circumstances and different races and colors. But like, I just am woefully ignorant about people in the city that I live in. And that's really what was a huge impact for me, was when I realized like, and these are some of the people who I can start with. And that was, I still remember that being a time where I'm like, okay, I have permission to be part of this conversation and offer whatever I can and say like, hey, if you need video, I can do it. And then after that, it just, a lot of people would call or would reach out over the years when they needed stories to be told. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it is a semi-selfish, like getting to sit in on your conversations and others. I get to learn so much without having to open my mouth all the time and just observe and like document.
Not learning from me. Yeah. I hope not. But tell us having been sitting in those rooms with like Lee Rowland and Clarence and Cece, Dr. Blackburn, having to sit in and not just, I mean, you've been in planning events and the backbone and car rides and all of this stuff. Give us some learning. How has it changed you?
Yeah. I think it's, first of all, it's given me a really strong realization of how much work goes into all the unseen stuff. The people who put it all together and how much work it is to make change happen is not just about showing up on a stage and saying something or having something simple that you share. Like, it's a lot of deep work that goes into these things. But really, just my focus is very specifically in Oklahoma City. So, like, I can't tell you much even of what goes on outside of other states or other cities. But here, seeing the way to change being through relationships and seeing that there's really no other way around it, that once people become close with someone doing something that they're unfamiliar with or is new to them, I mean, you guys, there's different language for it, but the proximity or the number of hours you spend with someone different than you and just how impactful it is. So what I've seen is those that are leading, the people that are leading, prioritize that. You guys and many others included prioritize the relationships and the time in the community. And from my perch, so to speak, where I stand back and get to work with a lot of others who you guys don't, but then I see all the people who you work with that I don't know, I see that the stuff, the faithfulness of showing up that you guys and many others do, ripples out into those other places as well that you might not even know.
Wow.
I get to see some of the language. I get to see some of the, oh yeah, we know him from, didn't he run for sheriff? Or wasn't he? Or like, it, and it goes both ways. So I guess it's hard to say, because it's like, it's always flowing and doesn't always make clear sense. But I'm like, wow, this was not being said in these circles 2 years ago.
Right.
Or like, that group wouldn't have even known about them until so-and-so introduced so-and-so to so-and-so. So that, it's, to be honest with you, it's a ton of and then things happening like in real time, like connections between people. But you have to be open to like, I think a lot of things don't happen for folks who aren't open to have new relationships or new engagements. If they, like, doors could be closed inadvertently by someone just not like taking the step into it.
Yeah.
I will mention, I think something that you'd said that is impactful is, and I think you downplayed a little bit, was,
of course he does.
Of course. That would be Mark Fashion, because this man is super talented, is, you said, I just showed up in the room and I listened. You know, as the cameraman, you weren't in front. You weren't the one speaking. And honestly, that's something that I've learned over the years, is is that's an amazing posture to take when you come into spaces for the first time. You know, sometimes we hear people who have very strong opinions coming into a room for the first time and sharing that. And in my approach, and I see your approach and a lot of others, is to listen and to learn, and kind of that posture where it's, there's a lot to learn, there's a lot to know, there's a lot of relationships to build. And so I don't know what I would call it, but it's kind of the cameraman posture, yeah, right? And you've like, you have been an example to a lot of people on how to move in spaces and serve in private. And, you know, you what you do really well is you think ahead of others. And so you're there early, you're there late, you're setting up stuff, you're doing these things, you're listening as well. And then another thing that a cameraman does as I'm kind of processing this analogy is you go back and listen to the conversation again.
Over and over.
Right. Again. So it's not just you don't just like leave the place unchanged.
Correct.
Anything like that. Yeah. You actually go back and reflect on, okay, these are the things that I heard. These are the people that have impacted me. And so rather than just kind of taking it as a moment in calling it what it is, you actually take the time to reflect what's going to be impactful and kind of carry that into your life.
Well, thank you for not, that's like really encouraging to hear, seriously. So thank you.
Yeah.
But also the joy / burden of a videographer is that I do listen to it multiple times and have to make this is just for any potential videographers or people who want to work with me out there. The work is in the editing it down, yes, and deciding, right, okay, that was all awesome, but like what stays and what has to go.
That's real.
And I've learned over the years, and that's where the excitement comes and the power of helping craft, like how do you take what you heard in those spaces and condense it into a nugget that can be shared in a world that needs things to be shorter, you know?
So, hey, but, listen, that's the perfect segue to what I have to say. Perfect segue to what I have to say about Mark and OKC Good and what he does. So I only have three people I trust with telling my story. Only three. There's my nephew, who's a video guy and a music guy who Mark has worked with. There's Taylor Doe, who is phenomenal at seeing things. And then there's Mark. And the reason why these three people are the only people I trust with telling my story, I'm trying not to cry because this is really important to me. It's really important. Is because I want to be authentic, real. When you see me on video, I want it to be me on video, not some watered down version of me. And these people are the ones I'll pour myself out to when there's no camera in the room. And so when it was time for me to run for sheriff, this had to be high quality, quick, and I have to get an entire population to know me quickly. And there's only been these three people that have footage of me doing what I love to do, is serve people. And so I said, Mark, I want you to look through all the footage that you have of me, filter out all the other stuff that has nothing to do with anything except for me serving people. And he doesn't do campaigns.
No, I've never done it before.
He does not do campaigns. He doesn't do all this kind of stuff.
But that one was fun.
And you could not tell me that he'd never done this before in the quality of videos that he did and the massive amount of interviews that you had to do for over a year just to get me to be a viable candidate in a race that was going to have an African-American for the first time serving that office. And to know the weight of that, and to understand that, and to understand that I wanted you to tell the story completely of who I am when the camera's not on and all those meetings and all that kind of stuff, and you nailed it.
Well, it was a lot of fun to do, and it was an honor to get to do it, and we got to do it. It was authentic. We didn't do the attack ad stuff. It was about you serving the community, and that was what we wanted people to know.
Right.
And thank you for sharing that, because I don't think I'll ever do a political campaign again unless you're running it. But I felt very honored to be trusted by you to do that, because that was a huge deal.
I could just tell stories about, you're in with governors talking about, I'm not even in the room, Tito. I mean, I'm not there. He's trusted to ask them the questions to tell my story. I mean, you're in with all kinds of people. Yeah. Political, kinds I mean, of people. All kinds of people that I'm not even there. And you pull it out and produce these phenomenal, authentic recordings to tell my story. It's fantastic. And you did that for kids. You did that for our program.
Kids are hard to interview.
And I try to prep them. I say, you just go with Mark. You'll be fine. You'll be fine. So you did a phenomenal job.
And so maybe before the last question for you, Mark, would be I would love to hear your thoughts on the way you think about asking questions.
Yeah.
I think as a society, we can ask better questions. And I think you're someone we could learn from in doing that, because I've been in rooms and got to watch you when you're doing your craft and the way that you ask questions. And I've actually been, you interviewed a young man who lived with me for a while, and he came home and was talking about the experience about being interviewed by you. So it was like, you have this special skill on the way to kind of ask questions. What is kind of going through your head? What's kind of your ideology around asking good questions?
Well, it's taken a long time, and I didn't get into this. I went to school for journalism. I studied, my degrees are in journalism, so which is about the art of interviewing people to ask, you know, to get the story.
Yeah.
So that's, the University of Oklahoma Journalism School had a lot to do with it. But really, it's just like trying to be authentic, trying to get to the truth. But then in my realm, I'm not doing straight up news reporting. I'm trying to help nonprofits, et cetera, share their stories. But the answer is, I first, before I turn the camera on, try to get a really good understanding in my head of like, who's the audience? What are we going for? And then, to be honest with you, I try to just make it as personable as possible. So like you could have the same people asking the same questions and get totally different results based on how the interview is going. And this is just my own little soapbox. It can be about the questions you ask, but part of it is just truly listening. Because I could sit here and give you a list of three questions. How did you start this organization? Why did you start it? What do you want people to know about it?
Mm-hmm.
And you will have people who will just ask those three questions and then be like, oh, okay. They said what they said, turn the camera off and go. But it's like, what the videographer or what the storyteller needs isn't necessarily the answer to those questions. It might be, but it might be like kind of like an and then type thing. Like, but now why do you say that? I heard you say your mission is this. Like, tell me more about that. Mm. They're not going to elaborate if you're not genuinely interested in them. So I think I try to establish a rapport and an actual conversational relationship before I even start the camera.
Love that.
So that it's like a real conversation. But that's a good question. And I think I've been doing it for so long that I don't think about it so much. It's just making sure it feels like an actual conversation.
For sure.
All right. So there's no more United Voice podcast.
Yeah.
We're wrapping it up. What's next for OKC Good? What are your hope for the future?
Well, thank you for asking that. To come back full circle from when I wanted to do the History Channel stuff, and I had the producer there tell me, you know, that's not a job that you can get, is being a documentary filmmaker. This dawned on me this week. I'm like, oh my gosh, it's actually my job now. Like the way God provided, the way that it happened is it's like, I do get paid every month to go out and tell stories in the community. And if I wanted to go, if I chose, hey, I want to go tell a documentary about this, like I could just go do it and still get paid that month and have no strings attached. So I almost get emotional thinking about that. I'm like, holy cow. It looked 0% like I thought it would. But now I have the capacity and freedom to go do storytelling on my terms, and my terms means in a way that helps build up the community and helps encourage people doing good work, not to go like, not the typical way that some journalists do it. But so what I hope is next is that I can continue to make a deeper impact in those impacting the community and honestly just do more. I work with 25 to 35 nonprofits a year, and there's so many more that could use storytelling. And so I need to humble myself to learn how to like teach and hire people to help do it. But the hope is that I can just keep doing it and that more organizations can get their stories told through what I'm doing. And so you guys take whatever you need to from here, but we do want to close at some point in this episode with where we have a pre-recorded thing from our friend Clarence Hill. And so, Can you just real quick, Waylon, like, because Clarence approached you about United Voice forever ago. And in a second, he has a new podcast called the Dream Together podcast that we would love all of you to go listen to. But if, either of you, if you wanted to sum up the work that Clarence has done in this race conversation over the last decade, because he's the gave the platform that leads us to be doing this right now.
Oh, I don't even know. So what episode was it? Episode one?
Yes.
So I think for really good clarity, they should stop right now and go jump right back to episode one on Clarence Hill. But I want to say what a mentor Clarence has been for me in this space is because he is a really steady, solid, loving guy who feels the same way many of us feel of this race issue, but has a way of taking his emotion and putting it into a package that we all can understand, feel, and want to be a part of, mm-hmm. right? He truly, I think, long before the politics got a hold of Stronger Together, he was living Stronger Together, right? He was making us feel in little small rooms at Buy for Less. He was making us feel like we truly could make an impact on how one community is treated by another community and how we're all just one community.
Yeah.
But I'm probably doing a really poor job about how, I mean, we have started out some conversations while I was angry mm-hmm. about an issue. And you can't leave angry with Clarence because he said it's okay, it can be fixed if we have this method, this strategy, and this approach, and we're strategic, and we stay in it for the long haul, mm-hmm. not for it's never a quick fix for right. Clarence. He has a long-term view and a steady hand and keeps us all focused on the job at hand,
yeah.
right? And here's the thing. There is commitment and there's compliance. And I will say successful people like Clarence, when they do what they want to do, they're committed. Mm-hmm. And he truly wants a Stronger Together community, right? He truly believes that. But when we do stuff that we have to do, we only get compliance, right? And so we've seen people come in this space that feel like they just have to say something. They feel like they just have to do something right. and all that kind of stuff. And they take a stab at it, but then they're gone. Right. They become a reel or an Instagram like or a couple of posts and then they're gone. But there's a few people in our community that do this because they want to, because they feel like they're called to do it and they're committed to it mm. and they don't go away. And so Clarence is still at it. That's why you see another project starting and the Dream Clock. I mean, I don't know where Clarence is, but I do know. I may not know what the project is, but I know what the end game is mm-hmm. because Clarence is so steady mm-hmm. with it. And I can go on and on.
And so we want to just share a few words from Clarence, who is the leader of Stronger Together, the platform that makes this podcast possible. He wasn't able to be with us today in person, but has recorded kind of a message for us to hear. So here are a few words from our friend Clarence Hill.
I want to thank all of our hosts, co-host teams, that helps steward deeper conversation around race, around bridging divides. And all of this work was pretty much volunteer. And what we were seeking to do was to create more of a conversation, because sometimes people just need to be able to put their ears to a conversation that they usually don't participate in. And what was beautiful about the United Voice podcast is it was actually reaching an audience that was curious. And what I love about that curiosity is that we just had some great mixes. I remember listening to kind of the voice of Waylon and CeCe going back and forth, and even the tone of their voice. They were just a great duo to listen to, regardless of even the topic. But here you had some people who have given their lives and are super passionate about these topics, oftentimes offering angles and thoughts that people had never considered or had never had time just to ponder in a non-combative situation. So thank you to Tito. Thank you to, I think McKenzie jumped in there. I see Scotia in some of these conversations. John Mittendorf and the work that he does with Breaking of Bread. Thank you for taking the time to be a part of this podcast. It's reached so many people, and I've heard great things from people who were able to enjoy all of the different topics that were covered that help us to be one. One of the most important things about a movement is finding a unified language. And our goal was to increase understanding, to open hearts, to not just listen for certain terms and cancel one another. So that means that I need to have some time to hear you out, to see what you're trying to say. So for those who helped jump in to put the podcast together, thank you. For all of you who helped hit like, hit share, and spread this message to others, thank you, because we accomplished something great. So you might be wondering, what are we going to do next? If you're still hungry for the topic of unity, we are actually not just going after unity. We're going after what it looks like for people to unify and transform their cities together. So we've launched the Dream Together podcast, and we are in the process of bringing leaders together so that they can form these big teams. And if you could picture a sunflower, that middle part, that brown part, it's actually 100 disc flowers. They're called disc flowers. And we picture that being our unity. And the bloom, these are the things that we do to impact our city. So we say impact out of unity. And so we're going to have conversations about different topics. We're going to continue to talk about, you know, ideas, best practices, solutions, things people are doing in different spaces around our city and in other cities to bring change and to more effectively work together. So join us. We look forward to having you. Our team, Scotia Moore, Lee Rowland, John Mark Hart, Corey Hall, and we're going to have several others that are going to join us for Dream Together podcast. Don't miss out. Help us spread the word.
Well, folks, we will miss you, and we will miss all of this, but we're excited for you to listen to the Dream Together podcast, which will be the new and the latest and greatest thing, and would love to connect with you as well. So thank you for listening. So, Mark, thank you so much for not just doing the show today, but producing every one of the shows.
Yes.
Producing every one of the shows and taking out my mess ups and making me sound so cool, because and making me sound so cool, and making Tito, you don't have to do anything with Tito. He's already there. But from CC, I know that we've talked so many times about how much we love you. Off camera, we love the work that you do for us, and so selfishly serving the community in the way you do, mm-hmm. given with your gifts and your talents, it has been marvelous. So thank you so much for joining us today, and thanks for the 68 episodes.
You bet. It's been thank you for hosting them, by the way, both of you guys, for the ones you've done, and it has been an honor. So
yeah, and thank you to everyone who has made this podcast possible. One last time, I got to tell you, we are seeking common ground for the common good, and I'm Waylon Cubitt.
And I'm Taylor Doe.
And this is the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the United Voice Oklahoma podcast. For more episodes, subscribe on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review. Please share the show with your friends and family. It really helps us to get the conversation out to more people. This podcast is a production of United Voice Oklahoma, one of the initiatives of the Stronger Together movement, and is produced by OKC Good. This current season is made possible by the generous support of the Oklahoma City Black Justice Fund.